We're here.
Yay! Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello, listeners.
We're in a new formation. Emily's got her feet up today.
Oh, listen, it's been a day.
Yes.
I needed to prop my feet up.
Yeah, sometimes there's just those days. We're halfway through the week as of recording, so
yeah,
gotta put your feet up.
I have a job that I love, but it requires me to wear heels a lot. Well, it doesn't require me, but I do wear heels every day.
Right, yeah.
And I walk around a lot, and I'm rarely at my desk.
Got to stretch those calves.
It's not even the calves, honestly. It's just the feet. The balls but of my feet.
It's all in the same area. I feel like it would help.
I think I just need a pedicure. Oh, no.
Oh, darn.
Oh my
That was my
cell phone. We're going to let it slide, though. Literally. It's going to be
fine. Off of the chair.
How is it going? Who are you?
I was just about to ask that. Who am I? I am Marguerite Virginia, and you are?
I'm Emily Klein.
And we are your hosts for Millennial Poet Society. Welcome back if you're one of our regulars or not a regular. You just like to listen every once in a while. And welcome here if you've never listened before.
If you are brand new, we are a Millennial Poetry Podcast. We talk about not just millennial poets.
We're the millennial part of it for the most part.
And we every week we pick one or two poets each to talk about and give you guys some background about them. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on what we do.
What do we do here? We read poetry. We'll give a bio on them, and then we'll read one or sometimes two, whatever, of their poems, give maybe an analysis or just maybe talk about why we like it or, like, just say that it spoke to us
and like, or we just say, this is a poem
this person
wrote.
And I liked it.
Yeah, I did all the research. I found out I didn't like them, so here's a poem.
Yeah.
That's never happened, but...
No, but we found out some surprising things about people that we weren't expecting.
Oh, like Allen Ginsberg.
Right.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. What a trip.
It's been a journey.
Yeah.
We're learning lots here. Thank you for coming along.
It's been really cool. We're on episode 26.
Yes.
And our podcast is officially older in weeks than we are in years.
It's
if that makes
up.
Any sense to
they
anybody.
Grow up so fast.
Oh, our baby needs health insurance of its own now.
Oh, God, don't even. All right. Well, before we get into the poetry, let's talk about our weeks, our weekends.
Oh, man. This week was fun. I did a fun thing.
Yeah.
I watched a movie that everybody and their mother has seen probably hundreds of times.
Oh, really?
I watched Moulin Rouge for the very first time.
I haven't actually seen it.
Really?
I walked in at the end of when you guys were watching it. So I've seen the end of it now.
Oh, no. Spoilers.
But, yeah, I haven't seen it.
Oh, wow. It's very good.
You enjoyed it.
I got it as a gift from a Secret Santa
freshman
year of college.
Hmm.
And I had never opened it. I was like really excited to get it.
Yeah.
It was a great gift. If whoever is listening, whoever got it for me is listening. It really was a great gift. But I was like, oh, cool. Like, I'm gonna watch that. And then college happened. And of course,
life happened.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I literally peeled off the tape, like around, like the closures on the DVD case.
Literally like.
Today? No. Oh,
like
you know what
a few
I mean.
Days ago
when
you
I watched it. And it was intense. The movie was intense. I really liked it though.
Mm.
And I was watching it mostly because I wanted to. I watched it because I really want to go see the musical.
Yeah.
Because
I've
they
heard
made
it's
it
very good.
Yeah. They made it into a beautifully adapted stage production, which, well, I've heard it's beautifully adapted. Yes. I've seen the pictures of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, it's gorgeous. And even just based on that, I feel like they've really they've really captured
like they've done justice.
The essence of the movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very over the top and extravagant And I love it. I think it's really great. And some of my favorite actors are in it. Karen Olivo and Aaron Tveit are starring. It's very good.
In the musical, yeah.
In the musical, yeah. I was
like, Aaron Tveit wasn't in the movie?
No, he would have been a baby. Like, that was in like the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
I think.
We could look at it, but we're just going to go with our gut. There. Yeah. All the way over there in our very tiny apartment.
Like 3 feet away, literally.
We're having a great time.
But what we also did that I did take part in we went to Smorgasburg for the first time this weekend.
Yes, we
that
did.
That was so much fun. So we've lived, as you guys know, in Brooklyn for 3 years.
BK
for life. But
except really for just 3 years.
For 3 years, but like for the rest of our lives.
Maybe, I mean, who knows?
For them, whatever. Never for say life never. Right now. So we've lived here for 3 years. Smorgasburg is a sign. Smorgasburg is a thing. Smorgasburg is this thing that happens every summer in different parts of Brooklyn, Williamsburg, Prospect Park. It actually, there's a small one that happens in Manhattan.
Right.
And it's this like just fun food pop-up where there's all sorts of different delicious foods and ice creams and like some drinks and stuff, but lots of just different vendors and everything. And so we went for the first time this year.
It was really cool.
Yeah. And we had amazing giant Mott sticks.
Oh my God. It was from Big Mott's. Mm-hmm. And they were very, very good.
So good. We had some real refreshing lemonade. It was hot, too.
It was very hot. It was a scorcher this weekend. Yeah. It was like 85.
Last weekend of summer? Or is this weekend the last of summer?
This is the last weekend of summer because the 22nd, Sunday, is the first day of fall.
There we go. So one of the last weekends. But Smorgasburg, if you live in the New York City area, goes until October.
Something. What? October.
Something. So make it out, y'all.
Yeah. And if you do miss the outdoor one, they do start up the winter market in Brooklyn, at least, somewhere near Barclays, I think.
Maybe.
In November. So nice.
Yeah, lots of yummy food. We had pizza cupcakes, too.
Pizza cupcakes were good. They had a surprise sauce pocket.
Yeah, I wasn't sure because you could, like, buy sauce to go with it.
Right.
And so I didn't think there was sauce on it, but there's a little bit of sauce on
it. I was kind of happy that they had the sauce on them already.
Yeah, no,
it would have been a little bland without it.
Yeah.
But it's also – it's a festival that's really known for showing – the New York scene, like food scene, what the next big trend is. Yeah. So like the sushi burrito debuted at Smorgasburg.
They had the ramen burger. At this one.
Yeah, the original ramen burger. Mm-hmm. The waffles, which are the waffles that are like really puffy little like.
I mean, we didn't start that, but in New York, it's sort of the.
Yeah, yeah. But like it's where all the food trends go
to
become big food trends.
And they go viral.
Yeah, it's how they go viral. Exactly.
So
yeah, it was fun.
That's what we had.
We had a good time. We met up with an old friend.
Yeah.
Walked around in the park.
It was a good weekend. It was a good Brooklyn Sunday.
It really was.
We also had our bagels.
And of course, because I'm sure you're very interested in knowing.
Sundays are for bagels in this household.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. We love bagels.
Yes.
Yeah. Sundays are for bagels. You know how like Saturdays are for the boys? With that stupid saying that people say?
Yeah, I guess.
It's like Fridays are for the boys, whatever it is. It's that stupid misogynistic thing where they're like for the boys, whatever.
Yeah.
Sundays are for the bagels.
Sundays.
And that's the only kind of.
It's bagel day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well.
That's a whole lot of nothing. But
This is nothing.
This is nothing. It's nothing. That's nothing.
But, so also, before we get started, I should mention, even though we aren't doing our Who's to Say episodes, as we have been saying, our season one ended. Season two is going to be coming in hot, though, and we need to get your submissions. So we're still compiling those. We want you to send them on over so that we can share your work with the world and hit the ground running. So if your work is self-published or unpublished, we want it. Send it to millennialpoetssociety@gmail.com. You can find that email address on our Instagram page if you search for MPS_podcast on Instagram. And give us a follow while you're there. Yes,
please.
And then you can click the contact or email button that'll be under our bio to go ahead and send us over some of your work. The email address will also be right in the description of the episode. So you can also just click right there, copy and paste or what
have you. Copy and paste.
Yeah, we definitely want your work. We so enjoyed doing that for the first season and being able to hear so many of your and share so many of your works, give voice to them. It's a real honor. So we can't wait for season two to come.
Whoop whoop.
Yay. All right. So we're on episode 26. It's an even episode.
Does that mean I go first? It's your turn.
I go first. Yay. Okay. So I'm very excited for this because I'm going to talk about someone who works very closely with one of our other alumni. I talked a little bit when I first talked about the first one about how they're just people that I listened to a lot in like high school, and I really got me into poetry and really interested specifically in like spoken word and everything. I should have looked up which episode it was I talked about her, because then you can reference back for the spoken word stuff.
Hold please. I can find it.
Okay. All right. Yes. Thank you, Emily, for looking that up. So originally I talked about Sarah Kay on episode 2, who is someone that I loved watching her spoken word poetry and just really got me into poetry in like middle and high school and everything. And all the videos, especially from like button poetry and whatnot. So if you know Sarah Kay or if you looked her up after our episode, you probably have seen some of her collaboration poems that she has done with Phil Kay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially one that I have loved for a long time. You just watched it for the first time the other day?
A long time since I'd seen them.
They have this really beautiful poem called When Love Arrives.
Oh, I love it.
It's really great. Also a really great one that you should watch is called it's Origin Story, I think.
I've seen that one too.
That they do together. Yeah.
Do so well together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're really great.
Yeah. So they work very closely together. They are neither married nor related
in any way, because yeah, they're spelled differently.
Their names are homonyms.
Right.
So hers is K-A-Y. Phil's last name is K-A-Y-E. Mm-hmm. So they're both, it's Sarah Kay and Phil Kay. And sort of a refresher from last time, what's really crazy, they started finding out all these really crazy similarities. They're both Japanese, Jewish Americans. Mm-hmm. And so his name is Phil. His sister's Hebrew name is Sarah. Sarah's brother's name is Phil.
Right.
Like, it's crazy. There's all these, and they're only a year apart. She's 30. He's 31.
Wow. Like, yeah. The it's world really, really crazy. Works in mysterious ways.
Yes. So we're going to talk about Phil Kay this week. He is a Japanese-American poet, as I already mentioned, and co-director of Project Voice with Sarah Kay, which I went over a little bit of that when we talked about her in episode 2. But it's this program that they have that brings poetry and spoken word to schools and helps encourage kids to write and help them learn about spoken word and how it helps them sort of share their thoughts and creativity and everything. So. Right. Really cool organization that they have.
We did, love Project Voice.
Yeah. What was the month that we did their prompts?
Project Poetry Month was...
Was that April?
April. Yeah, it was April.
April. April or May.
It was May. April. It wasn't May.
Yeah. So they had... And they have like fun prompts. That was for Poetry Month. And they had their Project Poetry Month like hashtag and everything. But definitely check out their stuff. Very cool organization. But so Phil Kay... it's interesting because the Wikipedia page said that he has 2 books, but his most recent book came out in 2018, and like everywhere that I was reading, it said it was his debut book. So I'm not sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
But so I think the first book, I honestly didn't look up his first book to see like where it was published or anything.
Was his first book like self-published, do you think?
Maybe. Maybe.
Because it could still be his debut novel if it's
debut book. Yeah.
Or yeah, sorry.
So the first one apparently is called A Light Bulb Symphony and was published in 2011. And then the most recent one that just came out in 2018, so pretty recently, It's called Date and Time. Mm-hmm. He's originally from California, and he began performing spoken word at the age of 17. He writes and performs spoken word still, and does pieces, solo pieces, but also duets with partners like Sarah Kay, as well as some others. In 2015, he performed, was invited to perform with the Dalai Lama as part of his 80th birthday celebration.
What?
Isn't that just crazy?
That is crazy.
That's insane. So yeah, he's performed on, at the MoMA, on NPR, on PBS, all sorts of different outlets. And he's performed in 19 different countries and across, like several hundreds of events, throughout the world. So wow. Definitely is well traveled. And when he is not traveling, he lives on the Lower East Side in Manhattan.
So close.
He's a New Yorker, and apparently Sarah lives on the Upper West Side.
OMG.
Right? They're right there. We could run into them if we go to some events.
I bet you we've ridden the subway with one of them.
Oh, probably.
Maybe not in the same car, but like on the same train.
On the same train, like going the 100%. Same direction.
Yeah.
So his, and his poetry has also appeared printed on clothing, on a clothing line by Uniqlo.
Oh, I love cool. Uniqlo.
Yeah. He also works as a filmmaker. He's one half of the Thanks Laura, which is, I guess, is like a production company, where he serves as co-creator, writer, director, and actor. And the project Distance is a series he helped write, produce, and act in. And it premiered at South by Southwest and was recommended by the New York Times.
Wow.
So multifaceted artist.
Yeah.
He also was the head coordinator of the Space in Prisons for the Arts and Creative Expression, which it was a program. It said he formerly was, so I don't know if it's a program that he just isn't necessarily heading anymore or if the program had to...
disband for some
reason. Yeah, but they basically went into prisons and helped share spoken word and poetry and everything like that with prisoners.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So this is a write-up, I guess, again, about his first book, or maybe it was a chapbook or self-published, but it says, A Lightbulb Symphony covered themes including family life, ancestry, and stories from his grandfathers. And then Date and Time, his more recent book, was ranked on the Amazon bestseller list.
Hmm.
So as I mentioned, he lives in New York City when he is not traveling the world. His work has been viewed millions of times online. I swear half of them were just me in high school. I can go down those like YouTube rabbit holes of just like watching all of it.
Yes.
He has this really great, fun style where he has like this soft voice that's really awesome to listen to, but his poems can be really funny. Like yeah. He has a really great sense of humor in them.
He has a really as weird as stupid as the sense, like he has this way with words that's like it's very enticing, and mm-hmm. he'll use them in very smart ways.
Oh yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
I really like his stuff.
Yeah. He's been a National Poetry Slam finalist. He's a 2-time recipient of the National College Poetry Slam Award for Pushing the Art Forward, which is given for outstanding innovation in the art of performance poetry. And I really loved, in the last line of his bio on his website is, when not on the road, Phil spends his time watching movies, using 90s slang, and quietly wondering to himself what the dealio is.
Yes.
So it's a little bit about Phil. There wasn't a ton about him online. All of his bios are sort of contain the same stuff and whatever. And there was this really cool write-up that they did in the New York Times recently about a show that Phil and Sarah did at the Bell House, I believe. I sort of mentioned it. The article actually, I think, came out the day we were recording for the episode when we did Sarah Kay.
Oh, cool.
Do you remember that? Like, I have the New Yorker and I have a little article like in front of me.
Yeah.
So that's something to check out if you want to.
We should post it on our Facebook.
Yeah, we should. We should post lots of things on our Facebook. Great. So I have a few different poems that I really loved of his. This is the one that I was going to read. Yeah, I'll go with this one. It's one of his shorter ones. It's from his collection, Date and Time. And so this one, I honestly, I didn't look up if there was a video for it. I don't know that there is a video for this particular one. I've never seen it. There might be one somewhere out there, but it's one of his shorter ones. Spoken word poetry can be kind of long. Mm-hmm. But this is one of his shorter poems that I really liked, and it is called Succulent.
Hmm.
When you called to say after our fifth morning together that my travel was too difficult for you and this had to end, I was in the market and I just bought a succulent with round leaves like plump emeralds, promising an easy and long survival. I carried it home with both hands, committed to its nominal care. The plant lasted a few months until a particularly long trip away, the death of a plant. So visual, the discoloration of the skin, the limp extremities laying to rest on the dirt. I wondered aloud about repotting it, perhaps more water and closer attention, a spot in the apartment with direct sunlight. Easier to just get another one, comes a new voice from another room. I really liked that. He has, like, a lot of his poems, I find, will have these, like, little metaphors that you sort of see where they're going, but then it's like they just have this thing. And I just, so the metaphor obviously in this is the succulent and like the how this whatever relationship he had fizzled out because of travel, and it's like the succulent died because he was away from it and didn't give it the attention that he needed and everything.
Right.
And then he's wondering aloud, well, maybe if I had given it some more attention and like tried to start over and whatever, and it's like the new person is just saying, may as well just get a new one. It's just easier. And just like, it hit me. And it's like, it doesn't hit you right until the end. And he has those. He has like, he closes them up so well that just leave you like aching at the end. You're like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Like, why did you do that to me? So I just really love the way he puts, this isn't necessarily one of his like funnier ones, but
no, but it's clever.
He, the way that he crafts them and puts them together and like tells the stories of things is really, really amazing. He's a great storyteller, and it's like poems aren't necessarily always telling stories or that sort of thing, but right. He does it so well with his work.
He really does. And I think spoken word is always telling a story specifically. No, not like, just because it's a person standing up in front of a crowd and speaking.
I don't know if it's always telling a story, but it's always like saying, it's making a statement. It's always making a statement.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think he's very good at that. And mm-hmm. So poems, I mean, it makes sense that he's good at writing this. I'm so tired, full disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked that poem, and it was very. I can picture him reading it,
mm-hmm.
and I think I like his voice. Really, is quite soothing.
Yeah,
he has a very.
I don't have his voice. I'm sorry, y'all.
No, his voice is just very. He knows what sounds good coming out of his mouth, and he writes more of it, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he just says things really beautifully, like the way that he gives each thing like. The time and thinks or maybe he doesn't, but it seems like he puts a lot of thought into his presentation of things.
Yes.
And he's one of those spoken word poets who also does like lots of hand gestures with his words and everything, mm-hmm. and like sort of acts out some of the things and for emphasis. And it's really, really beautiful. You really just have to like watch the videos of him. Phil K, look him up. He is so amazing.
Yeah.
Love him so much, Phil and Sarah. But yeah, so that's just a little bit about Phil.
Thank you for sharing. I love Phil K.
Me too.
This is great.
All right, well.
Shall we take a quick break?
We'll take a quick break before we get to some more feminism.
Yay! Stay tuned.
Feminism.
All right.
And we're back.
Ready. All right. So for those of you who have been listening the past couple weeks, you'll know that I've started a little segment for myself called Poetry and Feminism. Feminism and Poetry, whatever you want to call it. But it's just basically me taking y'all through a little walk through feminism and how poetry has been affected by it, maybe exploring some poets that were very prominent in getting the ideas of feminism to out there to the public, or who were known for being outspoken and in a good way and like fighting for feminism. And this week is no different. And so this week we are on to the second wave feminism.
Two.
And we had previously spoken about the predecessors to feminism and then the first wave feminism. So we're at second wave now. And I'm only doing one poet this week, but I may extend to next week to have another poet for second wave. We'll see.
Okay.
But I wanted to give you a little bit of background about second wave feminism before we start.
Awesome.
So second wave feminism was a period of feminist activity and thought that began in the U.S. in the early 1960s and lasted roughly two decades. While first wave feminism focused mainly on suffrage and overturning legal obstacles to gender equality, second wave feminism broadened the debate to include a wider range of gender issues, including sexuality, family, the workplace, reproductive rights, de facto inequalities, and official legal inequalities. Second wave feminism also drew attention to the issues of domestic violence and marital rape. It saw the first endangered rape crisis centers and women's shelters and brought about changes in custody laws and divorce laws. Mm-hmm. Female-owned bookstores, credit unions, and restaurants became the key meeting spaces and economic engines, for much of the movement during this time.
Cool.
Which is really cool. Can you imagine, like, just like gathering a bunch of
ladies,
women together at these women owned businesses and being like, all right, how are we going to overthrow the patriarchy? Like, I love it. It's still happening today. It's amazing. The administration of President John F. Kennedy made women's rights a key issue of the new frontier. His administration also established a presidential commission on the status of women, chaired by Eleanor Roosevelt. Her team recommended challenging inequality by providing paid maternity leave, greater access to education, and help with childcare for women.
Nice.
So they brought about a lot of good change.
Yeah, that's great.
Some non-white feminists who were active in the early second wave include civil rights lawyer and author Florence Kennedy. She co-authored one of the first books on abortion in 1971. Called Abortion Rap.
Awesome.
Celestine Ware of New York's Stanton Anthony Brigade and Patricia Robinson. These women fought to educate the masses on the connections between racism and male dominance in society. So thank you, ladies.
Yeah.
And once again, it's time for the feminism fun facts. In 1960, the Food and Drug Administration approved the combined oral contraceptive pill, which was made available in 1961.
Hey.
This made it easier for women to have careers without having to leave due to unexpectedly becoming pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, modern medicine.
Yeah. And also thanks for just like helping acne and cramps.
That's yeah, cool that too. Too. That too. Always a plus.
Super nice.
All right, so I'm going to talk about a poet today, and her name is Denise Levertov.
Hmm.
During the course of a very prolific career, Denise Levertov created a highly regarded body of poetry that reflects her beliefs as an artist and a humanist. Her work embraced a wide variety of genres and themes, including nature lyrics, love poems, protest poetry, and poetry inspired by her faith in God. Amy Gersler wrote in the Los Angeles Times Book Review that a, quote, any reader poking her nose into a Levertov book at random finds herself in the presence of a clear and uncluttered voice, a voice committed to acute observation and engagement with the earthly in all its beauty, mystery, and pain. Levertov was born in October 1923 and grew up in Ilford, Essex.
Do we know what day in October?
I think like the 3rd or 4th.
Birthday's coming up.
Yeah. She was educated at home and showed an enthusiasm for writing at an early age. She studied ballet, art, piano, and French as well as standard subjects. But she didn't really have like a real, I mean, not real, but like she didn't have like a normal education. Mm-hmm. So, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. In her writing, we see that she notes that humanitarian politics came early in her life. Her parents and siblings all had very strong voices, which they used to fight for causes they believed in.
That's amazing.
Yes, it is. At the age of 12, after declaring she would become a writer, she sent some poetry to T.S. Eliot casually, and he responded casually with a 2-page letter of encouragement.
Oh, my God.
So, like, talk about dream come true.
Right.
It was pretty cool.
Back in the day.
I know, right? You could just get a hold of anybody's address.
Right? Anybody. Like, how did they know where to send that? Oh. Like, it wasn't a P.O. box, probably.
Like, I mean, it was probably sent to, like, his publisher. But still, like, or maybe not. That?
Like,
maybe his address was just out there. I don't know. People were crazy. We think that our...
Actually, people weren't crazy, and so they didn't have to worry about crazy.
That's very true. Until
they did.
When she was 17, in 1940, she published her first poem. Her first book, The Double Image, was published 6 years later. Because she never received a formal education, her earliest literary influences can be traced to her home in Ilford, Essex. Denise and her sister Olga were educated until the age of 13, and then some sporadic religious training from their father, who was a Russian Jew who converted to Christianity and became a pastor, and he would teach them a lot and take them places, and and so they got educated. They were educated women, but not just in a traditional sense.
Yeah,
and you know they never attended like a traditional school.
Yeah.
In 1947, when she was just 24, she met and married American writer Mitchell Goodman. She moved to the U.S. with him the following year.
Wait, where was she born?
Ilford, Essex, in London.
Oh, wow. I don't know why I didn't realize she wasn't in the U.S.
Sorry. Ilford, Essex,
That's my fault. I missed that.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought it was like Massachusetts or something.
I don't know.
Huh.
She did move to Massachusetts at some point in her life, but...
So there was Massachusetts mentioned.
For like a... Not yet, but like...
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. Great.
Cool. Good. So she married Mitchell Goodman in 1947, and they moved to the U.S. together in 1948. With the onset of the turbulent 1960s, Levertov delved into socio-political poetry and continued writing in this sphere until she died. With Muriel Rukeyser, which is maybe it's Rukeyser. It's a very interesting last name. So with Muriel and several other poets, Levertov founded the Writers and Artists Protest Against the War in Vietnam. She took part in several anti-war demonstrations in Berkeley, California, and elsewhere. She was also briefly jailed on numerous occasions for social disobedience.
Hey.
You better go, girl.
Go. Yeah.
Many of her collections addressed war, and her goal was to motivate others into an awareness of these various issues, particularly the Vietnam War and ecological concerns. As a poetry editor for The Nation, she was able to support and publish the work of feminist poets and other leftist activist poets like herself. Levertov wrote and published 24 books of poetry. 24!
Wow.
Books of poetry, criticism, and translations. She also edited many anthologies. She received the Shelley Memorial Award and the Robert Frost Medal, as well as the Lenore Marshall Prize, the Lannan Award, a Catherine Luck Memorial Grant, a grant from the National Institute of Arts and Letters, and a Guggenheim Fellowship. Guggenheim Fellowship. She's very decorated.
Yeah.
Some of her poetry works include The Double Image in 1946, Here and Now, 1956, Overlands to the Islands, 1958, With Eyes at the Back of Our Heads, in 1958, The Sorrow Dance, 1967, To Stay Alive, 1971, Candles in Babylon in 1982, and many, many more.
Wow. She had two that came out in 1958.
Yeah.
Wow.
Much of the later years of Denise's life were spent in education. After moving to Massachusetts...
I knew it.
She taught at Brandeis University, MIT, and Tufts University. All of this despite ever having any, like, formal schooling of her
own.
Right,
she didn't technically have a degree from, like, anywhere, right?
Right, so they were... So I think they were all, like, honorary... residencies at these places.
Yeah, but still.
But she taught at them, yeah. And for good reason, because she's amazing.
Right.
Later in life, she moved to Seattle and taught at the University of Washington, and for 11 years held a full professorship at Stanford.
Wow, amazing.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, you know.
It's pretty cool.
It's fine.
I mean, it's cool.
In 1994, she was diagnosed with lymphoma, and also suffered pneumonia and acute laryngitis. She died in 1997 at the age of 74 from complications with lymphoma.
Hmm.
But that is just a little bit about Denise, and I would really like to read two poems for you by this amazing author.
Yeah, please do. Poet.
The first one is called Goodbye to Tolerance.
Hmm.
Genial poets... Pink-faced, earnest wits. You have given the world some choice morsels, goblets of language presented as one presents T-bone steak and cherries jubilee. Goodbye, goodbye. I don't care if I never taste your fine food again. Neutral fellows, seers of every side. Tolerance, what crimes are committed in your name? And you, good women, bakers of nicest bread, blood donors, your crumbs choke me. I would not want a drop of your blood in me. It is pumped by weak hearts, perfect pulses that never falter, irresponsive to nightmare reality. It is my brothers, my sisters, whose blood spurts out and stops forever because you choose to believe it is not your business. Goodbye, goodbye. Your poems shut their little mouths. Your loaves grow moldy. A gulf has split the ground between us, and you won't wave. You're looking another way. We shan't meet again, unless you leap it, leaving behind you the cherished worms of your dispassion, your pallid ironies, your jovial, murderous, wry-humored, balanced judgment. Leap over, unbalanced? Then how our frantic tears would flow and mingle for joy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
It is powerful. It's called Goodbye to Tolerance, and right. I fucking love it.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a battle cry, it feels like. Like, it's her being like, I'm done
with taking, people merely tolerating things.
Right. And, well, like, I'm done with people.
The shit.
Giving excuses for why our world is the way it is.
Right.
I'm so done with that.
Mm-hmm.
That resonated so deeply with me as I was reading it. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck those guys. You know, mm-hmm. it just sounds like a woman who is fed up.
Oh, yeah.
With her life and her society treating people like garbage.
Right.
And it's sad because this was written... in copyright 1975, and
it's still
so
resonates today.
Present and or present. What is the word? Pressing and relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just thought I'd read that to give you a little bit of a sense of her
sort of like outspoken voice,
her political poetry,
mm-hmm.
the protest poetry that she was very well known for.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh, it gets me fired up.
Yeah.
I love it. The next poem is called The Secret, and I just thought this was really cool. It's cute. Two girls discover the secret of life in a sudden line of poetry. I, who don't know the secret, wrote the line. They told me, through a third person, they had found it, but not what it was, not even what line it was. No doubt by now, more than a week later, they have forgotten the secret, the line, the name of the poem. I love them for finding what I can't, and for loving me for the line I wrote, and for forgetting it, so that 1,000 times till death finds them, they may discover it again in other lines, in other happenings, and for wanting to know it, for assuming there is such a secret. Yes, for that most of all. Oh, I just think it's so beautiful and such a juxtaposed piece. It's so hopeful.
Yeah.
Compared to the other one.
Right.
And it also reminded me of you and me, because we're just two girls finding the meaning of life in poetry, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. That's all we're trying to do.
That's all we're trying to do. Yeah. And that was copyrighted in 1964 from her her collection, O Taste and See. Hmm. And it sort of makes sense because 1964, our country's kind of always in turmoil, but I feel like the biggest push of like the Vietnam War and stuff hadn't totally hit.
Yeah.
You know, so it was.
So to have a little bit more of that hopeful voice.
Yeah.
Made sense.
Yeah. She wasn't as run down by our.
Yeah. Jaded.
State of the world. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But God, oh, can you imagine the kind of stuff she would write today?
Oh my God.
Oh,
just sure would to. Be. Insane.
I mean, like, it sucks that she would have so much content to work with, but yeah, it's also
well, and that
really...
her content from then still applies to today.
I know.
Yeah.
So anyway, those were just two that I really loved. Amazing. From my poet Denise Levertov.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And probably more second wave feminism next week.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Who's to say?
If not, we'll go into the third and fourth. So.
Great.
Yay.
Exciting. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's it for us.
I think so.
So we want to give a quick shout out, as always, to Zach Adkins for his intro and outro music. Thank you very much. We love it. And at the bottom of the show notes of this episode, you will see a little link. And if you click it, it'll take you to a support page where you can donate as little as 99 cents a month.
Dollar menu donations.
And it's really great of you if you can. A little goes such a long way, I swear. It'll help us get things like these better mics that we have, even better ones to come, hopefully. Mm-hmm. A place that is not our kitchen to record.
Where our roommate has to sneak around us while we're recording and she's trying to go somewhere.
Yeah. And it can also maybe go towards someday getting our sweet co-host Marguerite some help with the editing process so that she doesn't have to stay up until 3 a.m. the night before.
I can sleep.
We all want Marguerite to sleep, right? Of course we do.
I'm sure you do because you have to deal with me when I don't sleep.
I certainly do.
Please help me.
And and also, if you like what you hear, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else that you're listening, Stitcher, Google, where else can they find us? Spotify, mm-hmm. Anchor,
mm-hmm.
all the good places. Wherever you listen, feel free to rate and review.
It really helps.
It really does. It gets the word out and helps us keep making the content that you guys want to hear.
Spread the good word.
That's right.
Words.
Spread the good
words.
Words, 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 words. Spread the good words.
Do it. All right.
Well, that's all from us, folks.
Have a great weekend.
We'll see you next time.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.